Welcome to the Punished Podcast, episode 28. I'm your host, Sam Martinelli, pronouns he, him, and I am an editor at the Punished Backlog. For today's episode, we're diving into one of my favorite topics, the video game hype cycle. That includes trade shows, presentations, trailers, you name it. We'll get into our experiences with it, the good and the bad, and what lies ahead for video game hype in an ever-changing media environment. We'll get to this topic in a minute, but before we dive in, let's all go around and do some quick intros from our illustrious panel. Give our name, pronouns, and let's answer the following question as a nice little icebreaker. What game that you were especially hyped about disappointed you the most when you actually played it? So let's start with Dave. Well,
hey everyone, David Silbert, he, him, also an editor here at the Punished Backlog. And for me, anyone who knows me won't be surprised by my answer, but that game is Final Fantasy 15. Was hyped about that game for years back when it was originally dubbed Final Fantasy Versus 13. And while I did play the game from top to bottom, platinumed it, and included a video, one of our rare videos on the site of me running around the world to get a stupid trophy to unlock the pop the platinum. It never lived up to the hype.
Gary Wilson, writer here at the Punished Backlog, pronouns he, him. I always love when I get to come on these podcasts, I get to drop a little bit more of ancient gamer lore and reach all the way back into the past. So in this case, the game that I was really, really hyped about and then absolutely crushingly disappointed was the new SimCity. I believe this was back in 2013, 2014, somewhere in that time period. They had announced a brand new SimCity. It looked amazing. It was the first one in a long time, and it was absolute garbage. It was terrible. It barely ran. The lots were way too small. Nothing was entertaining. And worse upon all worst, it was right in that midst where every game that was on PC wanted to stay connected to the internet at every single point in time. This was before like Steam checks and things like that. It just wanted you to be connected. So if you lost even like a half a second of connectivity, you would lose hours and hours of gameplay. It was a nightmare.
That sounds so rough. I'm Amanda Tien, pronouns she, her, or they. I'm an editor here at the Punished Backlog as well. For context, I don't normally sound like this. I was at a bachelorette, then a wedding, and there was karaoke, and my voice is, this is what it sounds like, but I've got ginger ale, and I'm excited to be here. But my most disappointing hype, again, will probably surprise no one, was Mass Effect Andromeda, which came out 2017. I loved the Mass Effect games. They were like my favorite games of all time, but I only had started playing them in like 2015. And so I was so pumped that like a new game was coming out within my within my gamer lifetime. I was watching trailers all the time. Like every time any little bit of information came out, I was like on the subreddit. And the game was just so mid, like even without, like a lot of people roasted it for like the facial animations and stuff like that, like whatever, fine. But like so much of the story was just not there and the worlds were really empty and it was such a bummer. Like still makes me sad just thinking about it.
Yeah, that's definitely a big part of Amanda lore is
big time.
Yeah, a Mass Effect Andromeda. My biggest disappointment, it's actually a very recent example. It's Metroid Prime 4 Beyond.
Oh, rip.
Because the Switch 2's first year, people have various thoughts about it, but I thought what it really needed was a game like that. And it comes out, and like I'm with it for a while. I'm it's a little unconventional for a Metroid game, but I don't know. Towards the end, it really just lost me. And it's the kind of thing where it was so bad in the end that it made me question whether any of it was good before. Or if I was just like putting up with it because I thought it was going to build to something and it just didn't. But that's okay.
A little existential crisis, so that's great.
Kind of. Like, was it, you know, were video games a mistake? I don't know. But anyway, let's take a quick break. And when we get back, we'll jump into our topic. And we're back. Our topic today is the video game hype cycle. For as long as video game media has existed, some of the biggest moments in every year for players are presentations from big companies hoping to show off their upcoming projects and build up hype in any way they can. These would often involve actual company executives showing off trailers on stage in front of a live audience, and occasionally even playing game demos in front of that audience for the first time. Though many of the most notable video game marketing fests began as trade shows for insiders, things started to change around the early 2000s when shows like E3, the Tokyo Game Show, and others became events for fans just as much as they were for media and people within the sector. Coinciding with broader adoption of the internet, events like E3, which by the way stands for Electronic Entertainment Expo, they became a new kind of Christmas for gamers, or at least people who are fascinated with upcoming games and are constantly looking for new experiences. Gamers could watch trailers and demonstrations on YouTube, or even sites like Game Trailers, RIP, IGN, GameSpot, and others were just constantly showing you these presentations and trailers that you could watch as many times as you wanted. Over time, the big game companies started to realize that maybe the idea of the in-person event wasn't entirely necessary. Nintendo started releasing their famed Nintendo Direct presentations over a decade ago, live streaming a previously recorded video with no live audience at all. Eventually, everybody started to do this at least a handful of times a year, and those live showcases began to become fewer and further between. The pandemic ultimately killed E3 as we know it, and even though Jeff Keighley's Summer Game Fest has tried to fill the void, things just feel different now. Still, what can't be denied is that these kinds of showcases continue to feel unusually important to this medium compared to others. And while I don't personally view that as a good or a bad thing, it's definitely worth looking into why it's like that. So normally, this is the time in the episode where we would talk about, we'd ask someone who thought of the topic to explain why, and that was me. So I suggested this topic, and I want to open up to the other panelists in just a minute. I just want to say this topic fascinates me because I do enjoy watching these collections of commercials and getting hyped about games I might not even ever play. At the same time, it does feel a little silly to get so wrapped up in it, which is why I'm glad I have Dave and Gary and Amanda to help me work through these complicated feelings. So I just want to start off asking, you know, if everyone wanted to talk about their favorite or at least the most memorable game showcase or presentation, not this year, but ever. What stood out to you? Was it just about the games, or was it more about pacing or pageantry? So, Gary, I know you were asking about this earlier. What's your take?
Yeah, so I have been really kind of entrenched in video game Christmas for a very long time. Back in the days when E3 was basically a 4-day event at the start of June. You know, it was really kind of from the jump. You know, June like 3rd-ish to like June 10th-ish, you know, everything used to pop off, starting with Konami, and then it would go to Microsoft and everybody like that. So I've been watching all of these for a very long time. So when the question popped up in our press document of, you know, what is your favorite, I really had to reach back and kind of think through a lot of different things that have popped up over time. And what I realized was the best one that I can remember, or at least the most notable I can remember, is every single time Ubisoft decided to open a presentation with Just Dance, because they would fill this theater full of journalists who don't give a flying crap about any of this stuff with dancers and music and lights and this big board that would show off the Just Dance background and everybody looking super bored, because the joy of these conferences was, especially eventually, it really kind of transitioned from, hey, what is a great time to, you know, celebrate games? What's a great time to kind of show games and whatnot? It became, what's the wildest thing we can do to drive up videos on the internet? Why don't we just load everything full of dancers and go from there?
I just want to point out, Just Dance is incredible because I think there was like a Wii version of the game that came out like 3 years ago.
Yeah, no, like they will... I think they're still putting Just Dances out for the Wii U as well. Like they are still putting that thing on everything possible.
God bless them too. David, what you got?
It's a moneymaker. Yeah, like Gary, I think I've been watching E3 since the mid-2000s. Like, I distinctly remember, to tie it back to my most hyped game ever, Final Fantasy 15. I remember, following the breaking news of like Final Fantasy 13 and Versus 13 being announced, I believe both at E3 2006, maybe alongside Agito 13, which is like, you know, all three of them were part of the same package. So I've always been big on, like, you know, pie in the sky announcements, big vertical slices with, you know, gameplay that we're probably never going to materialize into actual real gameplay. But I have an easy answer, and I'm excited to get into, you know, some of the more, I like that you have in the prep doc, Sam, like pageantry, because I do think this is not necessarily the best E3, I think, for me, but I think this is just the one that I look back on the most fondly, and that's E3 2015, sometimes dubbed the E3 of dreams, the E3 of miracles, where Sony was able to weave in not just the announcement of Final Fantasy VII Remake, not just The Last Guardian, but also Shenmue 3. So it was that back to back to back. And on top of having a new IP like Horizon Zero Dawn, which looked incredible at the time and ended up, you know, alongside 7 Remake being something quite special. So that's a great example of, like, not all of those games were hits. I'm looking at Shenmue 3 specifically and to a lesser degree Last Guardian, but at least that was when dreams truly came true. And as someone who watched, you know, Final Fantasy games come out to kind of middling quality, seeing something, you know, make me dream again, and some of that actually coming to fruition and delivering was, you know, really, really nice. So I that's gotta be the favorite.
That's sick. Now I know, Amanda, this isn't like always your wheelhouse, but is there something that sticks out to you that you might have watched at one point or another?
Yeah, I think I watched E3. I would put it on in the background while I was studying or doing some really boring work. I would do it, I think I only watched from, like, I don't know, 2013 to 2019. And I do remember, and again, I wasn't like religiously following stuff, but, you know, it was like fun to have on and catch trailers. And I especially liked seeing people's like old Kotaku days and old Polygon, of seeing writer, you know, kind of collections of like the best trailers, the best announcements. But I do remember watching live. I just had to look up her name. Her name is Ikumi Nakamura, and she was the game director for Ghostwire Tokyo. And during Bethesda's E3 2019 presser, she was just like so passionate and she was so hyped, and like the vibes looked good. And it was such a refreshing energy from what I felt like were just like a lot of like guys in sort of bad fitting suits being like, here's this thing. And I'm like, okay, whatever. And I was like, this was awesome.
And that was a big saver for Bethesda as well, because Bethesda the year before had one of the worst musical interlude things, which was when, because the year before was when the notorious Andrew WK Rage 2 moment happened, which I love Andrew WK. He's one of my favorite musical artists. They trotted him out because they had him voice someone in the game to perform Ready to Die on stage in front of the most bored looking people could ever imagine. So it was great the following year to have Bethesda come out and be like, hey, we're just going to lean into the passion and we're just going to put devs up here who really care. Like, it was awesome.
I honestly did love that Andrew WK moment. It should have had me there instead of those nerds.
It was so good.
It was so great. But no, like, Amanda, I remember that moment, and like, it was just so genuine. It wasn't, it didn't feel canned.
Exactly,
it didn't
feel so earnest.
Yeah. And like, that's what you like to see from people who make your games. You like, obviously these people work their asses off and it's really, the labor conditions are pretty terrible, but like just seeing someone like her just like be like, I can't wait for you to play this, you know, probably average game about ghost hunting or whatever. But I don't know, I thought that was cool. And actually that the thing we were talking about, like pageantry and passion, the first time I remember, because like, I used to like read the stuff in magazines, like here's the E3 roundup, and you read in Nintendo Power or Game Informer or whatever. But in 2006, when Nintendo had their big presentation on the Wii, and that was when they first called it the Wii. That's when they announced that this console that was called the Revolution at first, which sounds really cool, was going to have a stupid name. But it was a similar thing of like, Miyamoto walks on stage with a Wiimote in his hand, conducting an orchestra that's playing like the Ocarina of Time, like field music, which is like a perfect song. And like that showcase was meant to do three things. Showcase what this technology is and what you can do with it. Showcase the games you can play on it. And like the third thing, I think this was what they nailed the most. is really convince people that this is where games should be going. And I say successful not because like everyone, like the Wii was the best thing ever, but like it was a huge success for them, at least in the beginning. And it was just cool seeing this presentation of like the first big trailer wasn't even for a game. It was just showing people on a couch, like throwing this Wii remote all over the place, playing tennis or, you know, playing baseball or golf or something. And like, that to me is what E3 was about. It was, he comes on stage to this whole audience. It's like, hey, here's me playing Twilight Princess on stage. And like, if you point at the screen, there's a little fairy that's a little cursor for you. Like, without, those don't really work as well if you don't have an audience to actually like react to it.
Totally.
And so I think, I don't know, that's just always sticks with me. I rewatched that thing a billion times. But Amanda, you wanted to back.
Well, no, that reminds me of another moment from E3 2019 when Keanu Reeves came out for Cyberpunk 2077, which was my second pick for most disappointing game for hype. But like, he's just there and he's so genuinely like sweet and enthusiastic. And people were like, you know, probably catcalling too much with excitement from the crowd, being like, you're beautiful. And he goes, you're beautiful, right? We're like, that only works if there's real people sitting there. Yeah. I second that energy that you can't replace that feeling of people being there and getting hyped.
Yeah, the word that comes to mind for me is like authenticity, right? And I think the magic of old E3 was that, you know, there was no mistake. Like, I guess, as opposed to the games themselves, which often were vertical slices that just couldn't possibly be real. And I think we still see elements of that today where it's like, we've learned like, okay, the recent Kingdom Hearts 4 trailer just doesn't look like it's even running on anything. You know, it's just, the game's not going to play that way. Whereas people on stage at these events, I think there was like an element of like something could go wrong. And I think that it was genuine. Like when Miyamoto, I think E3 2010, when he was demoing Skyward Sword and the phones in the audience, I mean, they said it was the phones, like the wireless interference or whatever it was screwing up the Wiimote. So he was trying to demonstrate the combat or some element of the, you know, the motion sensing or the IR. And it just was going haywire. And I don't know the hard numbers or not off the top of my head, but I don't think that impacted really the success of Skyward Sword at all. I think it was, if anything, it was just interesting to see Miyamoto struggling with technology just like the rest of us. And so those moments of authenticity on stage, when it doesn't go very well, it's interesting. And when it goes really, really well, I think it just makes the game shine even brighter.
Yeah, and I was about to bring that up before you did the Skyward Sword demonstration, because I'm a big Zelda guy, and even I was like, what the hell is happening right now? How can this possibly happen? Because even just a few years earlier, there was like the Wii Music demonstration, which is like a Nintendo low point for me, because they had all these people trying to play Wii Music on stage and they all look stupid and the game looked terrible, and it was terrible. But Gary, you had something you wanted to add to this as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's the thing that when I think about like E3's past and presentations past and things like that, it is those very like human-y moments that really kind of set them apart. You know, it is the Konami Mr. Caffeine that they would, you know, kind of roll out every year. It's the Peggle guy jumping up and down, really excited to kind of show off Peggle 2. You know, it's these things that were not scripted and buttoned up. It was, we are putting people who are not stage trained out on stage and just telling them to kind of go wild with it. And it's, I know we'll get into kind of like our feelings on the what we're doing now and kind of what it looks like now. But as you know, when I was younger and looking to these things, like it made everything so much more exciting, you know, that these people who are creating these things are trotting out here and being really excited to show them off. Like, yeah, E3 and to a lesser extent, TGS and Gamescom have always been kind of trade events, so they are, you know, big commercials, but there was genuine love and interest and passion, and because you had these people rolling out here to showcase that, you know, around this corporate veneer, like it made it feel all that much more human and much more exciting that these things are real, and they are real things to get excited about because people are excited about them, as opposed to Jeff Keighley sort of standing up there and being like, you should be excited about this thing.
Yeah, it's funny about you mentioned about like the trade show nature of E3. Like my dad went to like the first couple of E3s because he was working. He basically worked in trade shows, like setting up trade shows. And he says he remembers it was like the PlayStation was first unveiled there. And they had like a thing for Tomb Raider that had a bunch of like scantily clad women there. And he's like,
oh, yeah.
But also like the people who were going to these things at the time were not the fans. They were not just media either. They were like buyers at GameStop and Toys R Us and Target and Walmart. Like these were, they wanted to actually, they would talk to these executives at these companies and actually make business deals for how many units to buy there.
And yeah, so it's like that.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, CES that still goes on in Vegas, like is still that kind of for other parts of the entertainment and tech industries. You know, the Giant Bomb and GameSpot guys have great stories from back in the day at early E3s, you know, wandering through some of the halls to find the bootleg version of Guitar Hero that wasn't real yet, that someone brought over from Japan and just has a little booth and is like, hey, can you put this in stores? Can you make this happen? Like, can you put this in a magazine so we can try and sell these things, you know? There just used to be this grittiness to E3, even during like the buttoned up presentations that was like, oh, these are real people doing their best out here to try and make these things happen.
I do want to, that is a good point. I do want to get to one of the other questions, but I do have a quick anecdote of my dad going to one of these. It wasn't E3, but it might've been CES in like the late 80s. He was working for a company at the time that was trying to make, this is a real thing, playable games on VHS. Where like you would put the tape in the in the VCR and like have to sort of be kind of like a word game or something, and they're like, oh, this could be fine, kind of interesting and easy and interactive, and people already have, you know, VCR. And one of his coworkers comes up to him at one point at the show and goes, guys, we're fucked. And he's like, what happened? He's like, look over there, and it's Nintendo showing off the Game Boy.
Oh man.
He's just like, yeah, it's over, man. No one's going to buy this.
It's over. Totally fucked.
Over before it started. But just while I go into this, we're kind of going to like what makes the live action, what used to make the live action part of it so interesting. But like today, since we don't really have that element anymore, even with Summer Game Fest, it's still, again, just people on stage kind of talking about trailers, sometimes the Muppets. What would you say makes for an especially good version of those presentations, where it's maybe it is just a Nintendo Direct or Sony State of Play. Sorry, I'm actually great. David, you had something you wanted to bring up.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think for me, it's threading the needle, right? It's threading the needle between, I think E3 was better when we had moments of levity, and often that meant having some kind of exaggerated motion or the Peggle 2 guy or just something wild. But I think, you know, unfortunately, I feel like we don't really live in that realm anymore, where everything is just very buttoned up or pre-recorded in the case of a Direct or a State of Play, right? So I think there was a sweet spot, and if I hadn't had said E3 2015, my second favorite E3 conference would have been Sony's E3 2016. And that was when, if you recall, there was the live orchestra. And I think they did it for a few years, but they had the live orchestra where they announced like God of War 2 live music. I forget. I'm not sure which each of these might not have had their own soundtrack, but like
Death Stranding. And Ghost of Tsushima was also
Ghost of Tsushima. There. I think maybe Days Gone. Like, I don't know which one got the music treatment, but it was just like, that was back was when. That, yeah.
Was that the year that they did it was four. Like they were doing four games specifically. And they had dressed it up to look like the dance hall in
Last of Us Part Two. That was it. Or maybe, yeah, I think they might have done it for a few years too. Like, I think they at least two. But what I loved about that conference, you know, regardless of your, you know, everyone's individual opinions on particular games and Sony's catalog at that time, was just like the sense of pacing. And I remember at that time there was like this mentality of just show the game and let the gameplay speak for itself. You know, there was like this meta beforehand. I know Xbox fell into this where it's just like, Amanda, you put it best. People in suits strutting out and saying a lot of garbage and then showing some thing that doesn't even translate to the game that we eventually got. But there was that time where it was just like gameplay. But there was an element of, again, showmanship, where we had folks on stage playing music to games that would soon become beloved. And I don't know. It's hard to replicate that now, you know, with Keeley's and Nani 3. We get some of that, but it's not the same, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's something that just occurred to me. I wonder if some portion of like why we don't have that physical element quite in the same way anymore is like everyone trying so hard to avoid getting like dunked on or become a meme, or it's like this whole aversion to cringe culture. This idea that not cringe as culture, of the aversion to cringe as culture, that like people are so scared of authenticity and vulnerability that like if things aren't super buttoned up, they seem off. And you see this every time, like Nintendo had a direct a couple weeks ago, and so many reviews of a direct is a hilarious thing to say when you think about it, but like so much of the feedback of it was, yeah, the games were, it was a terrible direct, terrible, awful, but like, the games look really good. And I'm like, well, that's the point. Why else are you watching this? And it's like, yeah, the pacing could have been better. They could have been a longer, again, it's just what games do you actually want to play? And they're not wrong to say it, to criticize it, but like, I wonder if like the Peggle 2 guy is like, God, I really wish I wasn't. Or who was the guy? Was it Phil Harrison for the PS3? Talk about the ultra realistic, you know, graphics, and then like here's a battle against a giant crab, and
like when they're announcing the PS4 and they trotted Mark Cerny out there to talk about Knack for 20 minutes, and it's the like Mark Cerny is a brilliant developer, a fantastic kind of cheerleader for these sorts of things, and is also the driest, most boring person in the world. So it's like, all right, you're just showing us a lot of polygons falling apart and a banana coming out of spheres at some point. And also this, I don't care. Show us something.
But also Mark Cerny's probably, he's still kind of part of that previous generation that like my dad was, where like, this is mostly for the people in the industry. And yeah. once it expands outside of that, which it fully has in the past, like 15, 20 years, now they look like an idiot doing that up there. Even though it used to be the deal, it used to be what we did.
It's every time they put Todd Howard in front of a microphone. It's like, Todd, you have no media training. We know you have no media training. This isn't going well.
He tries so hard, man, but he really does. He's such a nerd, and like, just be yourself, man. You're not this other guy. But anyway, like,
well, actually, to second that, the one of the few, I don't really watch any of these directs or any of these state of plays or showcases at all anymore. But the one that I can remember watching in the last 5 years was the Nintendo Switch 2 Direct in April 2025. So much that I was like live blogging about it. Like, I couldn't believe it. And I don't even own a Switch 2. I didn't even buy one because I was just like, it's expensive. I'll get to it later. But I remember that there were three hosts of it, and they were all like technical leads. I just pulled up their names. They're all technical leads on the Switch 2. It was Koichi Komamoto, Takahiro Doda, and Tatsuya Sasaki. They were all hardware guys for the Switch 2. And they were like, I remember watching them do the Switch 2 welcome tour, where it's like zooming in inside of the Switch 2, being like, look at the magnets, like look at the little Wiimote people walking around. And I was just like, these guys are really excited. And that makes me excited. Like, this is totally ridiculous. And most people just want to be like, where's Link? Where's Mario? Where's Hollow Knight Silksong? Like, and there were a ton of trailers they dropped in that. But that was one of the few times that I was like, if you're going to do a technical spec showcase, you better be super into it. Because otherwise, why am I going to be into it? And I remember thinking that was endearing.
I mean, I think you bring up a good point, Amanda, that even in this age of having, you know, a pre-recorded direct, there's still room for artistry. And totally. I think there's something that Kyle Bossman showed on a recent Delayed Input, where it was like, I'm blanking on the president of Nintendo, or the one who the modern figurehead for all these directs, is it Koizumi?
Yeah, Yoshiaki Koizumi. Yeah,
yeah, where he's showing off, thumb wrestling in the upcoming Switch 2 Resort, you know, the latest version of Wii Sports, and he engages in the thumb wrestling minigame and loses dramatically. And Kyle, you know, quipped like, well, now I know that there's stakes here. Like, they could lose. You know, it's like when Reggie was, you know, willing to play Smash Bros. On stage back in the day. Like, those were kind of the moments that I can't speak for everyone, but I lived for, was seeing Nintendo is normally so buttoned up. We know how they'll sick their lawyers on anyone, right? And I think that's, you talked about it earlier, Sam, where it's like, we're, you know, maturing as an industry and there's good, a lot of some good and a lot of bad that comes with maturing as a late stage capitalist, you know, corporation that owns a lot of subsidiaries. But when we can have time for fun in these directs and just remember that the whole point of playing games is to feel like you're a kid again, I think that's when they're at their best.
Yeah, I mean, I opened this by talking about like Ubisoft rolling out all of these dancers and flashing lights and whatnot to, you know, pump up Just Dance, a series of games that I would never play. Not because I, you know, anything particularly wrong with them, just they're not for me. But I remember that stuff. I still think about that stuff. That stuff made me laugh, even if I thought it was corny and kind of stupid. Like Nintendo, the most button-up company in the universe, and two different E3s had puppets made of their president of Japanese studios and of their American studios, and then partnered with the robot chicken guys to make a Mother 3 joke. Like, there was a time when these things got to be whimsy. They weren't just, you know, video game trailers and presentations and advertisements and things like that. It was genuinely a celebration of all the things that make the video game industry interesting, and that includes the memes, the jokes, the cringe, you know, all of the sorts of things like that. And now we're just in a place where it's like, if you're not making something that is stockholder and shareholder approved, what is the point of putting it on? Which is weird to think about now that we're not in a space where you have to also rent out a studio and, you know, pay union fees for, you know, production companies and things like that.
Yeah, no, it does feel extra corporate now, extra buttoned up, as we keep saying. But I just wanted to, I'm wondering, like, we're all saying, like, yeah, we wish it were less buttoned up. Why do we care this much about it, I suppose? And not just for the whimsy of it, not, like, why? You do not get this from people who are really into movies or really into books or really into TV shows, generally. Yeah, you might have it for specific things, like people who are fans of the Marvel Cinematic Universe or DC Comics or whatever. But everyone I know who's like really into games watches some of this stuff, or at least is aware of it in ways that aren't quite. So like, I guess like for those of us who do care about this stuff, like why do you care about it? Gary, why do you care so much about this?
Because for a long time, video games didn't have an Oscars. We didn't have, you know, a true celebration of the art form as it was. And E3, and again, to a lesser extent, TGS and Gamescom, that's all we had. That's all we had for people to kind of be connected and be weird about it and talk about these different things and talk about what was upcoming. You know, we had forums, of course, we had, you know, the podcasters and things like that. You know, there were always people talking about these things, but there was no real good way to just sort of see the other people who were interested in these things and what to get interested about. You know, you could watch, I forget the name of the G4 show that would just play trailers constantly. No, it was the thing that came on before X-Play.
Attack on the Show?
Not Attack on the Show either. That was a studio show. Mm-hmm. No, it was basically Game Trailers, the show. I just forget the name of the actual thing. But you could watch that alone from your living room and get excited about these things, but there was no human element to it. There was no connectivity to it. Like, you knew people made it, but there was no face to it. E3 gave us a face to it. It gave us people. It gave us talking. It gave us that sort of connectivity and that sort of celebration. And now the best we get, again, is Keighley. And Keighley is a cheerleader. I don't want to say that he is not a guy who cares. He really does love games and he loves the art form and he loves all these sorts of things, but it is all through that lens instead of a variety of different lenses all coming together. Or if you are getting those lenses, they're pre-recorded, they're corporately kind of created and things like that.
I think you make a really great point, Gary, in that I never really thought of it in terms of, you know, having a shared space for us to celebrate games. And I agree with you that, you know, Game Awards and various, you know, accolade shows have helped to kind of fill that void. I'd also, you know, think on the flip side, the beginning of the hype cycle, right? Let's say the end of the hype cycle is when the, you know, the Expedition 33s of the world receive their, you know, their recognition at the end of the, you know, the whole games cycle at the end of the year. the beginning of it is, you know, the first teaser, and I know in many, many ways, E3 or not E3 is where we see that. But I think in at least years ago, right, back before games have, you know, become increasingly digital only, we have things like Steam Next Fest and consumer shows like PAX, where you can go hands on and try stuff, you know, directs are ready to go and you can, we can all be watching it, you know, day of, because Nintendo just has it uploaded. I feel like for me, E3 is different than, like, you know, when you're watching a film, Tribeca or South by Southwest, like the product is in front of you, like as part of the circuit as press, you get to see the film ahead of time. The whole product is there for you, right? You could absorb that, a screener of a show or a movie ahead of time. But with a game, it's so hard to communicate to someone what it is like to enjoy that unless you have the controller in your hands. And back when E3 was, you know, kind of closed off and was not consumer, you know, I know there was a period of time where consumers could play stuff, but the presentation was the only way that we could interact. The only way, so you had to tell a story. People on stage had to make you care about what was going on. And sometimes that meant leaving a lasting impression and doing something silly. But nowadays, it's just a different landscape.
I agree. And I think that there's something, you know, economic about it. And we mentioned the late stage capitalism, but like the game, even 10 years ago, right? These are companies that are trying to convince people to buy a $60 game that in order to fully experience, they're going to have to play a minimum of 40 to 50 hours, maybe more than that. Like, I think for gaming, Sim, you asked about why this industry compared to other industries. I have to imagine that some of the hype cycle has to do with the amount of breadcrumbs developers, publishers have to leave in order to get you excited about it. So that way, months later, you are willing to shell out that money and play that game. Like a movie ticket, you know, depending on where you see it, could be $10, could be $20, you know, whatever. But then it's over in a max of 2.5-3 hours. A book, you know, if you're buying hardback day one, maybe it's like $30, right? But like a game, you are asking for a large investment of time, money, including the hardware it's on. I think there's a certain amount of literal buy-in that these companies are expecting, particularly during that kind of heyday of console wars, right? Like, how can we make you buy our $400 metal box so you can buy $60 to $80 of other little metal boxes and then do just that and believe in our metal box more than the other guy's metal box? So I think that the trailers have understandably become like part and parcel of the culture around gaming. I think it totally makes sense of why the hype cycle is so intrinsic to this culture.
Yeah, that's a good point I hadn't considered. And like, these are all great points and I agree with every single one of them. And something I think about a lot is that's the hype cycle. It just keeps going. It keeps going around and around. And I think it's, a lot of these showcases aren't even about like, hey, we want you to buy these games, especially if they're from like hardware makers, especially if it's like Xbox, PlayStation, Nintendo. They're trying to keep you within an ecosystem. And like, for some reason, we're all thinking to ourselves like, oh, I have all the consoles. I have all of them. I have a Steam Deck. But when I see like Nintendo showcase saying, hey, you can buy Onimusha, the new Onimusha later this year on Switch 2. I'm like, well, I like the Switch 2. I can always have all these other games I play on it. Maybe I'll play this on Switch too. And it's just like things like that that like get you excited about new ways to play games that you can play anywhere and you could always play. I think still paying attention to that hype cycle and these trailers is a big deal. But Gary, what's your thought?
I mean, to that exact point, you know, back in, you know, the heydays of E3 and whatnot, because everything was publisher and developer focused, you know, it was the Microsoft concert or, you know, conference. It was the Ubisoft show. It was EA, you know, it was all these folks, you know, eventually it expanded out, but you know, it was really that core six for a long time. It was Microsoft, it was Sony, it was Nintendo, Ubisoft, EA, and then a rotating one of like Square, Konami, you know, other folks coming in and out.
Bethesda, Capcom, maybe.
Yeah. So yeah, And Bethesda started doing their own thing. Capcom started doing their own thing. You know, it all kind of expanded from there. Actually, all of that kind of expanded after Nintendo pulled out and started doing directs, which is an interesting thing to think about, but neither here nor there. It was all kind of built around this. There was this kind of human element for sure, but there was also this competitive element. There was this, you know, we are going to show you the best of the best. Ignore that other guy who's going to put on a show about an hour after this one ends. We have the best of the best stuff right now. So, you know, not to say that people brought their A game, but people really tried. This was the opportunity to really talk to people. And now that we have, you know, a half a dozen Nintendo Directs through the course of the year, and Microsoft is rolling them out every other day when they've got something to announce, you know, whether they just want to show off Forza, what have you, you know, there are just more opportunities to talk to people. So some of these bigger shows can fall flat in a way that even the older ones couldn't, because the older ones couldn't fall flat. If they fell flat, that was their year. Like, that was done. That was it. Like, Microsoft lost the PS4 Xbox One console cycle because of a bad E3 2013 presentation. I don't think that's arguable. The fact that Sony opened their presentation 2 hours after theirs with a clip of Adam Boyes and Shou Yoshida handing a disc box back and forth and saying, this is how you share games on a PlayStation 4. Go talk to the other guys about how they do it over there. That was it. The console war was over for that generation, and Microsoft has never recovered because that was the state of the industry. They had one opportunity to make that impression, so they really had to try. Now, no one really tries as hard anymore. If they got even the smallest thing to tell you, they'll make an announcement about an announcement. Like, we make fun of it in the Discord all the time Was it Capcom who literally 2 weeks ago was like, hey, we're going to have an announcement for an announcement in a few weeks. You know, that we're going to say that on this date, we're going to have something to share about the future of a Capcom, you know, series that we'll be talking about more in the future after that. But expect something on this date. Like, it's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. And I mean, for me, as someone who doesn't really follow this stuff, like, I'll see in our Discord chat, you know, y'all will be like, who's watching the State of Play? Who's watching today's Nintendo Direct? I'm like, did they just have one? Like, why are there like seven of these? Like, what is going on? Like, how do y'all even know this is happening? Like, can they just give me a big bulletin later? Like, to your point, Gary, they could just share info whenever they want it, however many times that they want it.
Well, that's what I wanted to get to. So when you're saying you're always seeing like the 500 messages every time you skip one of these, Amanda, but like, yeah. I guess like, why doesn't this do it for you? Like, why, like, and that's one of the reasons why I want you to be on this podcast. Cause like, it's easy for all of us to say like, oh, we remember all these great E3s and we remember the bad ones too. But like, you're like, who cares? Why am I watching this? I'll get the news later. Like, what, A, why doesn't it do anything for you? And B, what's your preferred way of getting new information about games and new things coming out? How do you get excited about stuff?
This is a very thoughtful question. I did not grow up following the hype culture. I think for, you know, all the expected reasons, like, I was a girl and, like, you know, gaming culture was just not accessible to me as a child. And my parents were like, I don't know about video games. And if we do, I got to research in advance. So, like, I have no nostalgia for E3 growing up. And so only as a young adult where I was like, this is a big presser, big thing showing me that, you know, the biggest, most exciting news about the thing I care about. To sort of Gary's point, like, as I became kind of a hardcore gamer as an adult and not just sort of a hobbyist as a child, of saying like, oh, this is what gamers care about, E3. I'm a gamer, so I want to care about E3. And I think a couple of things where I started to fall off of, obviously it stopped existing. And over the last 6 years that I just really don't care about, like, there's just so many presentations. There's so many games. It's hard to tell what's going to be good. And even the times I did care, like Mass Effect Andromeda and Cyberpunk 2077, those games sucked. Like, I was like, man, I put a lot of effort in to following the hype cycle. I pre-ordered these games and these are not good. Like, I think for me, I find the, Like, I don't really watch the Game Awards either. And last year we did a Discord party of live watching it, and it was really fun. And I really liked watching it with everyone. But it kind of caught me off guard. I was like, this is just hours of commercials. I can watch commercials on my own time, anytime. Like, it wasn't, I thought the Game Awards were going to feel more like the Oscars, and that there were speeches from developers, that there were maybe behind the scenes moments, or, you know, honoring people who had passed in the industry. And instead I was like, it's just ads. In which case then I can watch ads on my own time. And if I am going to watch them on my own time, why do I want to watch 3 hours of ads for games that I may not even like? And so I, at a certain point, probably about 5 to 6 years ago, right around COVID, I was just like, I'm not watching this stuff anymore. And I'm going to trust curated lists by games journalists I care about, you know, at Kotaku, at Polygon, you know, in the old days. It's why I asked our writers, I was like, does anyone want to write a list of trailers of games that are good and interesting? Because I don't want to go watch all this stuff. And David was like, I got it, I'll organize it. And so I read that because I was like, this is interesting. So, I think too, I also got to a point where I got really tired of watching movie trailers where I felt like the entire movie was in the trailer. I was like, why did I even bother watching that? Like, now I've seen the movie, I've seen all the best jokes, I've seen all the best gut punches, you know, that I've seen the vibes. Now I'll go and watch a 2.5 version of the really good 4-minute trailer. And I just, you know, I didn't want to feel that way with games. And so for all these reasons, I just stopped engaging with the culture. And I figure anything that's really good will rise to the surface through, you know, talking to people.
Yeah. I think that's a really intelligent point and really well articulated, Amanda. Like, as we've kind of moved into this new space where it is just ads, where, yes, E3 has always just been ads when you really get cynical about it. You know, it really is just
for sure.
buy our stuff. You know, here's why you should buy our stuff. Absolutely. But now we're in a space where it is just ads, where it is just, hey, here's our stuff, and, you know, you can go and you can find it. And losing that human element has definitely done that. But I also think it actually leads into a great example of, like, why I think Summer Game Fest this year is harder to talk about in this way, because I actually just think that show was kind of a miss across the board, not just presentationally, but I think that just some of the announcements were a miss. It just didn't work. But in Summer Game Fest's past, weirdly enough, the best ones were when it was Keighley just sitting in a spare room in his house. And now that they're on stage, I actually think it's lost something, which is strange to think about. But why the Game Awards has never really worked, you know, and the Game Awards has kind of stepped into this space of being like, you know, what can we do to make this magic happen throughout the year now, and, you know, and whatnot. And it, as you were talking, Amanda, it made me realize I have not given a crap about Comic-Con in years. Like, I have not thought about anything that's come out of Comic-Con. I've not thought about a Hall H panel in God knows how long, because even with the human element there, it just sort of reached this place where it was like, oh, I'm either getting too much or I'm not getting enough. Like, I'm either learning way more about this than I've ever cared to think about, or there's nothing in here of substance for me to actually sink my teeth into. And I've never thought about the Game Awards in that way, but I think that has been the problem with that show, is that because it is equal parts, we want to celebrate the industry with these awards, and we have to load this full of trailer advertisements to make sure there's not enough developer stuff, and there's too much game stuff.
Yeah, I find the Game Awards and Summer Game Fest especially frustrating, because unlike these other companies that, like, you know, Nintendo, Capcom, whatever, that, like, set it up themselves, this airspace mostly goes to the highest bidder. Like, so that's why you're always seeing trailers for games you will never hear about again, because that's their entire marketing budget, essentially, for some of these things. And one thing that I'm mostly sick of is if you have, like, a brand new IP, or at least like a reinvention of something, if you just give me your like 15 to 30 second CG trailer, like, Amanda, sorry, fuck off. Like, stop that. Who gives, like, I apologize because you're going to be editing this, not because I think you can't curse.
That's okay. Let's leave. We're going to leave the curse words in. Go for it.
Great. Fuck that. I don't like that shit.
Fuck it.
Like, I understand if it's like you know, here's a Zelda Ocarina of Time remake teaser, where like I already know what that game is. Obviously, I want more information. Or it's one thing if someone's like, hey, here's an announcement. We are working on a new Virtua Fighter or a new Street Fighter or a new whatever. Like, I already know what to expect. Every now, I see all these trailers for like, here's a new extraction shooter, but like, it's not gameplay shown in the trailer, so I don't know why it's interesting. Why do I care? Why should I care about this? And I think so much of these shows just feels like that now. It's just, you're trying to get me to buy into something, and I don't know what you're doing. I don't know what it is, and I don't know why I should trust you.
And this year, I went from both sides of that person. I went 0-3 during one of the press conferences this year for trailers ending on a dramatic shot of a single person that I had no idea who it is, why I should care, what is this? Like, at one point, it was Cao Cao that I know from, you know, playing Dynasty Warriors of many years. But, like, I don't know what they're doing with that, like, or anything like that. And then immediately after was a Virtua Fighter trailer, and it ends with a solid shot of Pi. And I was like, hey, I was both those people at once. You know, we've reached this place where every trailer is exactly the same. It is a 30, to your point, Sam, it's a 30-second cinematic of like mood lighting and fire and mud, and then a dramatic shot of why you should care about this without actually telling us anything. And the only time we actually get anything is when someone like Sakurai decides to sit down and play Kirby Air Riders on a direct for 30 minutes.
I mean, I was thinking about that during the Game Awards when they had Divinity Original Sin 3. And I'm telling you, man, if you did not know what that was and have never played a Larian game, there is absolutely no way that trailer sold you on anything. It was just, here's a lot of blood and violence and some death metal. But like, what do you do? I don't know. Just figure it out, bozo. That's like, what they're telling you.
When that trailer started at TGA this year, or 2025. When that trailer started, I know my Divinity stuff, so I was able to point and go, oh, it's a new Divinity. And then I stopped caring. Technically, a trailer like that, for me, who likes Divinity Original Sin, who likes, you know, those games, that should be for me, right? But because it didn't do anything, all I went was, oh, there's a new Divinity.
Yeah.
Didn't think about it again.
Kind of ruins it for you. But David, I know you had something you wanted to say about this.
Yeah, I mean, it was a few comments ago, but, you know, with Gary, your point about how you felt like, you know, this summer's kind of cycle was a bit of a miss. It's funny because, and I'm definitely more in Amanda's camp here, where I forgot, I said as much in our write-up, I didn't even realize it was happening. I didn't realize not E3 was happening. And when people were like, it's that week. And I was like, what week? And I was like, oh. And I caught the recaps, but I thought it was a really solid showcase, but that's because I'm like a hunter and pecker. Like, I'll like go into the state of play, and I'll like hop around until I see something, or I'll watch a direct on 2x speed until I get to the good stuff. And for me, it's like, give me all the content, but I'll bob and weave until I find the things that I'm interested in about. And I think it goes back to the whole idea of like artistry. Like, I just think the artistry of the original, you know, the golden era of the aughts and teens, you know, building a well-oiled, well-coordinated showcase from start to finish, it was always tough to get right. Like, you know, Microsoft never really got it right. Sony had it right for a few years. Nintendo struggled, but at least, you know, had some kind of charming elements to it. And then now I feel like, especially with Jeff Keighley, like, it's just, and again, buy your ads, right? Buy the billboards. It's gone. There's no real artistry or flow to it. And so I guess the last point I'll make on that is, you know, for my comment is, it was refreshing, and it has been refreshing to see Nintendo always invest. I've always appreciated, even if I don't watch it, the Treehouse Lives after their direct, because at least if you're going to give me a trailer with, I mean, they do a pretty good job banging you over the head in terms of what this game's about, like a voiceover regurgitating exactly what the trailer just explained. But then they have the Treehouse to further contextualize it, because people are going to play it. And I've always appreciated that Nintendo has kept that. It gives that sense of, again, a window into how the game actually plays. And shout out for, you know, Star Fox. You get to play the demo, right? Like, I appreciate moments like that where, you know, one of the few good things in my eyes that have come out of more recent summer, you know, game mess fests is stealth announcements, stealth drops, stealth demos. Like, let me try the game. And that can be where the point of discussion starts, right? Like, it doesn't have to start with some garbage CG trailer. It can start with a demo that, hey, this looks really cool, and I'm excited for this to come out whenever it's ready. And for now, I'll hold on to whatever small memories I made in that little 10 to 15 minute vertical slice.
Yeah, no, I think all presentations are better if they give you something at the end that you can continue that hype going. Before we take a break and go to our next section, I just want to ask one last question about, I guess, like, what do you think these showcases need to do going forward to, either in Amanda's case, win you back, or in everyone else's case, keep you excited? Because I'm not going to lie, after that Summer Game Fest thing, I'm like, do I really want to keep watching this every year? Like, I don't know. I think maybe I kind of like Nintendo's like drip feed approach of, every couple of weeks, here's like a 45-minute presentation on one game, and we're going to give you all the ins and outs, or, you know, or more indie-focused ones that are based on genre, whether it's the Wholesome Directs or something like that. Well, Gary, what do you think?
Honestly, I think the answer is just the ship has sailed. You know, I think that we, as a gaming kind of culture, has just moved in a place where we can't be those kids again. We can't recapture that magic again. You know, we specifically the four of us, I think, are just at an age now and kind of aware now where you can't put the genie back in the box. We know these are ads. And again, E3 was always ads. It was always commercials. And the magic was in the people, sure. But there was a comment made earlier, I forget by who, but how the video game industry is aging up. You know, it's becoming more mature. It's become more buttoned up and things like that. I actually think the thing is that the gaming audience, ourselves included, are just becoming more cynical about corporations, about publishers, about the people in charge, about the people who are making these things and putting on these things. You know, as the industry has contracted and more people have lost jobs, you know, Microsoft, I thought, actually put together a pretty good showcase. I'm not going to cover any of it because of other extenuating circumstances, including the BDS boycott. But I thought they put together a pretty good showcase. And then 2 days later, all the news breaks that they're going to be laying off and selling studios and closing studios and doing all these sorts of things. We've just become way more aware of the inner workings of these companies and of these publishers and of these developers, that it's hard to ever get the magic back of just being excited about the trailer, because it will always come with the fear, to David's point, of A, is this thing, you know, years and years away and I'm never going to see it? Or am I now looking at an amazing trailer for a game that is just never going to come out due to industry conditions? You know, I remember, this must have been, you know, not E3, 2021-ish, might even be 2019, somewhere in that time period, a Microsoft presentation where they announced Contraband from Avalanche Studios. They showed nothing actually about the game, but just what the concept of the game was going to be, you know, what it was going to look, you know, kind of what it was look like, what it was going to target. And I got super pumped for it. I thought it was going to be rad. I like Avalanche games, Just Cause, especially Just Cause 3, kind of missed. But those earlier Just Cause games were great. You know, there was a lot there. And then that game was never spoken of again. And then we got confirmation last year that it was dead and never coming out. And Avalanche as a studio was then gone. I know those things. I am connected to those things. I can see those things now. And there's this omnipresent fear that what if I just buy into this ad and into this trailer for a thing that will never happen again? So I think the only thing that a company could do at this point with these presentations to kind of get that magic back is to drop everything they show that day, you know, have it be a direct of just stealth drops, you know, have it just be, and you can go play it now, even if it's just a demo, you know, it's got to be a presentation that is dates and times, and it is coming out on this date and you could be certain of it. We've made jokes for months that every time they've shown off a GTA 6 thing, it's going to come with a new date that's 6 months further into the future. I'm done with those. I want any presentation, any game that is shown to now just have a day and date that I can put on in the next calendar year.
Yeah, I was just going to build off that point, Garrett, because I think you nailed it. I think for me, I've noticed that, you know, Amanda, I know you and I are kind of the, we carry the torch for the, you know, for the next fest, you know, like we like getting in there, and especially because I think there's an indie bent to all of it. We get to see independent creators who couldn't afford, you know, a booth at a trade show. They couldn't afford to travel to Los Angeles for E3. Maybe they, you know, for whatever, maybe they, for whatever, a plethora of reasons, there were barriers to entry. And now, you know, within an afternoon, you can, thousands, tens of thousands of people can sample their game on Steam. I would love, to your point, Gary, like if publishers could take more of a note out of that book, out of that playbook. I think we see some of it, like the studio that comes to mind, it's like Team Asano, who does, you know, within Square Enix, that does Octopath Traveler, Triangle Strategy, Adventures of Elliot. Like that team, whenever they have something that drops at a Nintendo Direct, there's a demo and they want feedback. And I get that that's because they're a smaller team relatively within Square Enix. Like, it's not like we're going to see necessarily a Final Fantasy demo, although I remember Final Fantasy 16 had a 2-hour demo, and that was a big exciting moment when that was dropped. I think we need to get back to that, to your point. And I would love, you know, for publishers to take more risks. Like, it was pleasantly surprising when Pragmata got a demo well ahead of its release date, because, and I get, again, new IP for Capcom, like there's a little more risk involved, as opposed to like, is Witcher 4 going to get a demo? Probably not. But publishers should embrace that, embrace the fact that, you know, early access games do so well nowadays. Like, look at, you know, Baldur's Gate 3, where you get player feedback ahead of time. What a gift it is to learn from players how can you can make your game better. Supergiant's so good at that as well. Like, let people play the game. Like, trust that players will get excited. And if they don't get excited, like, use that as fire and fuel to make your game better and course correct.
100% agree. Like, I think compared to how little I follow any of the trailers, any of the trade shows, and compare that to how many blurbs I write about Steam Next Fest, right? I'm writing like 10 blurbs for pieces because I'm like, this is so cool. Like, it's great to see people do weird stuff. And I like trying it out, getting a real taste of it and saying, what is this game actually going to be like? Is your point, Gary? I think one of the trailers I remember being really excited about was Beyond Good and Evil 2. I think it was E3 2017. That game hasn't come out. Like, there's been no news,
and it never will.
And it never will. And
hey, it might still be alive.
It might, doubt it, RIP, you know. But I think that game is, you know, but like that, to your point, Gary, like, I've learned my lesson. I'm tired of getting excited about big flashy games that are just never coming out, or when they do, they suck. Like, I'd much rather go in and play like 2 to 3 hours of an indie game, get a really good sense of it. And if that's data, if that's player data that the developer can use to be like, oh, this person had a really hard time doing this like fishing rod, we should change that. So I do think that there's some genre shows that I think can be interesting. I think Wholesome Games is the first one that comes to mind. But then again, I've never watched any of them. I think I play a lot of the Wholesome Game publisher titles. I've tried a lot of demos, but I don't watch that show, partially because it's like, it's too much mac and cheese. Like, I think the thing that worries me about genre shows, even though it seems like it could be a good idea, is that you just end up getting like, how many fighting game trailers can you watch in a row back to back? How many Metroidvania trailers can you watch in a row back to back?
A million, thank you.
Like, maybe I'm just not enough of a genre diehard, but like, I think that for me, I start to lose the nuance in what makes those games interesting on an individual basis when I see like 10 similar games in a row. I'm like, that's cool. I just, you know, now I want a salad, you know? So yeah, that's, I'm not sure how it would change. I think I agree that I think it would have to go to demo release, but I don't know. I truly don't know what would make me come back to watching pressers ever.
A lot of interesting thoughts. I'll say one last thing and then we're gonna have a little break, but I find it interesting how we're saying, like, yeah, we don't want to see a trailer for Contraband and then there's just nothing for 5 years and then we find out it's canceled. But at the same time, like, there's a part of me that kind of wishes there was much more transparency. I think it's just we agree that the amount of transparency there is bad. There's either, like, either say less or say a lot more. I thought it was really cool a few years ago when EA announced they're doing a remake of Dead Space. And it came out, and it was good, and people were happy. And I think early on, they were showing you, like, just little, like, development assets and, like, sketches they had. And, like, it's, like, clearly, like, okay, this is just Isaac, who's, like, his whole character model is ready to go, but he's just walking in these, like, blocky polygonal environments because they hadn't finished that yet. And I thought that was interesting that, like, they were willing to show you, pull back the curtain and show you what was behind. And nobody does that, really. And we hear all the time about, hey, this movie just got greenlit. It has a director and a producer, but no cast. And it doesn't even really have a script. Like, that's not that weird. Like, even if that movie never comes out, it's just like, oh, well, just shit happens. It's Hollywood. But for some reason, this is the one arena. This is the one place where we have, fans and media have specific types of expectations for how they're given this information. I think that's another reason why this video game hype cycle is so unique. It's the only one where we demand a very specific level of transparency that we're never going to get. And that is what it is. But anyway, I'm sure we could talk about this for another 3 hours. But I just want to give us a quick break before we go to our next section. All right, now we're going to do something quick. It's a little fun. I thought this worked out kind of nicely for our last episode about just kind of let's make our own showcase right now. Let's all decide. It could be anything. We could pick a company that's real. We could make something up. It could be a genre or a region or a console. What kind of games would be on display? How long would this be? Are these games that you want to be for real or just wish lists or whatever? So I guess, like, what? Let's start. What kind of presentation are we doing here? Are we doing one game? Are we doing a lot of games? What are we thinking? Just anyone who has a thought, just say it out.
A lot of games.
Amanda, all right. So let's say this is about a 45 minutes to an hour presentation. This is just that this is you go to the candy store and you get a scoop of everything.
Yes.
That's what we're thinking. All right. Everyone good with that? Cool. Are we doing like a genre of game or are we just doing like here's what's coming to PlayStation or something?
I think we go genre agnostic for the reasons that Amanda said in the last segment.
Nice. Right. I think it'd be great if many of the games could have like a little guy that jumps. It's like a classic. There's got to make sure that there's just like a little, maybe a little mouse guy, a little Hollow Knight looking guy, but at least every game, there's got to be a little jumping guy.
Okay. I actually like that. So this is, let's be honest, this is going to be an indie direct in that case.
Yes. Yeah.
What if it was instead of a like developer or publisher based thing, it was a single series presentation, but different permutations on that series. Like this is all of these developers suddenly have the licensure to Moss, basically.
Oh, like the everybody Star Wars making, Visions of
yeah, like basically Star Wars Visions. That's but this cool. is a presentation on hey, here's the little rabbit mouse guy from Moss.
Yes.
Go make a game.
Love that.
And whatever you want. So yes. Obviously we want like 45 minutes. That could be 20 games. That could be 25 games. What's the first kind of game that you show? And what does that trailer look like?
I think you start with the car game.
The
like
car?
You start with
car start like driving.
Yes, you start with the driving game. Cause here's why the best presentations I can think of always start with a Gran Turismo, a Forza, something like that. It showcases well. It's exciting. It's kinetic. It moves. But also, if people show up late, they don't actually feel like they missed anything. Because they can go, they did that. That's cool. I don't need to go look that up. I haven't missed much of anything, but I bet it looked nice.
So are we thinking like Moss Kart or Moss Nightclub? Like, are we doing like drag racing in the streets? Or is it like silly kart racer?
I think it's got to be Burnout. I think it's got to be a Burnout alike, but with Moss.
Okay, so
like,
it's a Burnout.
Actual, but I like it.
Can we come
into it? I'd play that. That'd be the first car.
I would play it. No, I love Burnout. I would play that.
Burnout's awesome, yeah.
I lobby like
Burnout Paradise, but Moss would be rad.
I mean, anything Burnout Paradise, any IP, I'd play it. I'd be there day one. I want to lobby for, there's no budget. If it's an indie showcase, we're not going to have budget for a full orchestra, but could we have like a 3 or 4 piece, like indie band that accompanies all of these games? I feel like that'd be sick.
Can it be
fully done by Anamanaguchi?
I was going to go by Crush 40. Who
even better?
Crush 40 does all the music for the Sonic Adventure games.
Oh yeah. We need a vocalist. We definitely need a vocalist that just goes way too hard and then sounds like Amanda the day after.
Perfect. I love it.
And I was about to say, Amanda, I think you did. Did you do like a bunch of Slayer songs at karaoke? What's going on?
Oh yeah. I was hitting everything. I did, some Blink-182. We did some Backstreet Boys. We did, a little Outkast. We did Talking Heads. We did Bowie. We were just, wasn't Slayer, but we did all the karaoke classics. And I was very supportive of anyone who, even if I wasn't up there, I was singing in the crowd.
But that's actually the next thing that gets shown. I've just had some inspiration.
We got Mouse karaoke.
It doesn't have to be karaoke, but it has to be like some kind of rhythm. It could be like Mouse rock band or even like Just Dance Moss Edition.
I love that. I'm so here. Also, as someone who did play a lot of Just Dance, I am so here for that.
Okay. Because, hey, you start off hot. You start off with a hot one. Then you're like, okay, now that we've brought you in, here's the weird shit. Here's like the very genre-specific shit. So we got the rhythm game. I'm thinking the next one after that's got to be like, I want to call it a cozy game, but like kind of some kind of...
Cozy shops him.
Not even a shop, just like some kind of resource management game, like a survival game. Ooh, nice. Kind of like Moss as Valheim or Minecraft kind of
game. I was going to say, like, after you do your like your driving, your cart, whatever, followed by like your kinetic rhythm game, that's when you do your 10-minute, hey, here's everybody that decided to make a horror game-esque thing, whether that be survival-based, whether that be resource management, what have you. Because that is the like, hey, you've come down, we're going to make it real chill. And by real chill, I mean ice cold for a little bit. We're going to just make things real dark. And then we're going to pick things back up in like 10 minutes.
Well, I do love cozy plus horror. I think that sounds great.
But can we transition into, I liked your idea, Amanda, of like a cozy, like hard cozy game.
Hard cozy shops.
I'm talking mushroom. I want the Moss. I mean, is he a mouse or? Yeah, or a rat.
It's a little mouse, yeah.
Okay, but can we kind of fudge it?
A
ratatouille.
And really, it's a sheet, so even better.
I want her as like a ratatouille like chef.
Yes! Oh my god, this would be the best thing that ever happened to me. Oh, I want this game.
But
so
maybe
bad.
It's in like a magical forest instead of Paris, yes. And you're serving, fantastical creatures.
Oh, making little mushroom plates for little dragons. That would be so good.
Yeah. I mean, it's like they have like a fantasy life, but with Moss, kind
yes.
of. Like that.
Be so good. And then Alan Wake 2, but with Moss.
Okay, so yeah, we gotta go back. So after the horror, like Moss Wake 2.
Moss Wake 2.
Moss and Evil comes left.
I just keep thinking of Rental, which I don't think any of you guys have touched, but Clint and I did. It is this is very indie horror game that actually involves a rabbit.
Animal Crossing aesthetic, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's got a very Animal Crossing aesthetic, and I'm like, oh god, we're just oh no.
But here, after the horror, we gotta lighten the mood again, and not just with a cozy game. We're doing a Moss party game.
Nice.
It's gonna be like Mario Party or Crash Boom Bang. Or, I don't know, man. I don't play this shit anymore. But like, definitely the game where,
Fusion Frenzy, but Moss.
Oh, Fusion Frenzy, you got me back. You got me back here with Fusion Frenzy. Definitely some kind of like friend slop game that like it costs like $5 on Steam, but I was like 500,000 daily active users or something. Mm. Yeah, that's what's got to be next. All right, I'm just gonna call on you, David. Next Moss game that comes to mind immediately. What do you got?
Shoot, I had I was
David,
still
you
on.
David, you blew it. Gary, you're next.
Oh damn!
I'm joking.
I was gonna say like. I was still on the party thing, but I was saying like heave ho, but heave Moss, where you're like,
there we go.
So it's a collaborative game. So we're easing out of we're getting more into like the adventurous stuff, but it's collaborative. So maybe you have a fellow mouse that you're doing stuff with. Maybe you have to fling each other around, your side scroller,
Like
Yeah, like an It Takes Two.
Like an It Takes Two, but like, could, I bet you there's a good opportunity to have like other rodents from from me. Like you get like the Mickey Mouse pack or like the Fievel.
Some of the animals that you befriended in the cooking sim come to help you.
Yes. Oh my God.
Like the dragon gives you a lift across like a treacherous body of water that you normally drown in.
Need it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, I keep the ideas coming. Gary, I know you touched your microphone. It's time for you to shine.
Oh yeah. So originally I was going to say, this is where you get peak butt moss, which is like, you know, all of your animal friends are kind of trying to climb this mountain together. But actually I'm going to pivot that out, which is now you hit ultimate chicken moss, which is your competitive couch co-op or couch, you know, what have you with, you know, trying to build up something much like Ultimate Chicken Horse, except that it's all rocks and stones and mossy and whatnot. You're trying to get to the top to get the mushroom, you know, it's all fun. It all looks very nice, but you can also tell that the four devs that they have in the back room playing this for the video are cursing up a stream while trying to play this together.
You know what? I think now it's time for a big hitter.
Yeah.
We're having a moss RPG.
Yes, that's what I was going to say.
Is this where we get to God of Mouse?
No. We need a shield. We need an axe. We need a skill tree.
I think you kind of end with like the Souls like heavy dark. You end with like Mossborn.
Mossborn. You get
the, please, the Mouse Bloods.
The Mouse. Oh,
Mouse
yeah,
Bloods. Yeah. Oh my God.
The Mouse Bloods. But like, this is where you get the like classic Final Fantasy Dragon Quest turn based, like HD 2D. Get that in there. Square's attempt at a moss game.
I was going to say Moss Quest. Yeah.
Yeah. Get Moss Quest out there. Everyone is a mouse, but with a slightly different like shirt. Or actually, you have a job system, but every one of them has to be like one. There has to be a chef in your party.
I was just going to say the chef makes a grand appearance. Yep.
Yeah.
You
need this in my life. And this is like the game that like. It's not for everybody, but if it's for you, it is the most for you game ever made.
Give me what's another job, just real quick. What's like, out there?
Explorer.
Yeah, you're mechanic. Like architect.
Postal worker, you little mouse postal worker.
Postal worker sounds sick.
Yeah, no, how about landscape architect?
Nice.
Mouse
graphic designer. Perfect for all of the...
I'd buy this game in a heartbeat, I'm telling you.
Yeah, right. I need it.
Yeah, this is the most like Punish Backlog coded game.
We have not set a game yet that I would not sink like 10 to 15 hours into.
I play all these games. Like, let's call Playark right now and be like, hey, guys.
Let's just send them this bit after this goes live. Seriously, like, here's some free ideas.
Exactly.
Under studio.
You're welcome.
I think there's money in these ideas, so we might want to be careful about that.
That's true. Put it right now. We'd love to be we'd love to be publishers. We'd love to be financially involved in all of these games.
Yeah, we all know the last big hitter. There's going to be another moss platformer in there. There's going to be a moss Troyvania. Yeah, we're going to have something like that. But we know it's going to end on like the Mouse Bloods, Mossborn. Like just
Legend of Moss. Yeah.
Yeah. Like he's got a big ass sword and
such a big sword.
And like hordes of enemies that just come out of the ground and like are impossible to
deal with. But the mouse can do it. I believe in her.
Like the bosses are just various like anthropomorphized cats.
Ooh, nice.
Or birds.
You know, I believe I have touched the original moss exactly once on VR. I believe it's all about like books and whatnot. So it's just a bunch of like ink monsters coming out of the pages of a book that are, you know, being swiped down.
Do mice like that, cheese?
Is that a thing? Yes.
Do mice like cheese? Yeah. Can the cheese weave into this?
Wasn't that the classic, like you put a tiny, tiny square of cheddar on a mouse trap?
The final boss is just a mouse trap.
No.
That's like a Paper Mario game.
It's like a Paper Mario. I just said earlier,
Paper Mouse.
And this is where you have your board game party game of the game Mousetrap from the 90s.
Oh, nice.
Mousetrap.
That's a free IP. Boom. License.
These are all great ideas. And it just occurred to me that we already have a Mouse Adventure blood board game that came out a month ago. It's called Mina the Hollower. So
at least that would exist so they can be best friends. So that's great.
Yeah. I am reading Mina the Hollower. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. That was an awesome segment. Let's take another break and have a quick outro. All right, that was an awesome discussion, and honestly, I had a lot of fun making that showcase, Mouse Bloods Forever. But to close out this pod, as always, let's just go around and say what we're playing, watching, listening to, reading. Like, what's something you want to highlight? Let's go with Amanda first. What's floating your boat these days?
What's floating my boat? Let me look up a book. Hold on. There's a book I'm reading that I just can't remember the name of. Well, let me look. I'm Googling it. It's in my backpack. I'm too busy traveling.
Straight to Googling, folks.
Oh no, straight to Google. Oh fuck. Oh, fiction.
Please do not cut any of this.
I want to cut all of it. Okay, I found it. It's called Esteril. It's by Dijon Tiago Stankovic. It's a great book. I found it at a little indie bookstore. The book is set at a very fancy Portuguese hotel during World War II. And it becomes this, it's basically a series of like micro short stories of all the people that are coming in and out of this hotel. And like there's spies, there's musicians, there's waiters just trying to get by. There's this little boy who's in, like, he's gotten there, but his family hasn't been able to come over. Really, really interesting and fun. And just really well done. It's very touching. And then video game wise, I've just been playing a lot of demos, including the Moss the Forgotten Relic demo entering Steam Next Fest, which is a non-VR version. So the mice have been on my mind. So that's what I've been up to lately.
David, what about you?
So I have not really been doing a lot of much of anything lately besides, you know, watching the World Cup and, you know, the Knicks. Congrats again, Sam. There's one game that I've been playing and has really caught me, you know, when I'm not playing the hodgepodge of recent releases, which is kind of dominating. Like, I'm just not doing a lot of the backlog stuff, which is a shame because I was off to such a rip to start the year. But I am playing one game that I grabbed on Steam. It's, you know, a side-scrolling RPG, and I've heard a lot of great things about it. I don't think anyone here is going to know what it is. I'm feeling like maybe Sean, shout out Sean from the site, might recognize it. Maybe Gary. It's a game called Ast Libra Revision. It's like this 2D side scroller made by Keizo. I'm not sure where they're based, but kind of niche, side scrolly, really grind heavy RPG that looks graphically like a Flash game. I don't want to, it sounds mean, but it's the truth. Like, it's just not a pretty looking game, but it is such a good game. It's the kind of RPG that, it feels like the closest thing I'm going to get to like a Chrono Trigger, which I know seems like ridiculously high praise, but the game is truly excellent. Like, the writing is just impeccable. The story is really well done. The gameplay is satisfying. It's rare to play a game that I've never heard of and think to yourself, like, this could be one of the best RPGs I've ever played, but this definitely makes the list. So I am interested and eager to write something about it when I inevitably finish, if I finish it. It's like 65 hours, and I think I've played like 20, which is an accomplishment for me, if you know me. Like, I don't really make it that far. So that's what I've been up to.
And I have been rereading The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay for a book club, which is a novel from, I believe, 2010. Which is incredible if you really like some historical fiction, but with also a little bit of magical realism in there. It is absolutely fantastic. It's all about comic books and the kind of creation of the comic book industry in the era around World War II. And then on the games side of things, I'm way back into Pokemon Champions. I've been playing a lot of Pokemon Champions this week after the new format dropped. I have finally hit Master Ball tier, which I am feeling great about because I've made the dumbest team humanly possible that I might end up writing something for the site on if it ends up. I went on a 16 win streak and I don't think I've done that before, so that was a lot of fun. And then I'm getting ready to dive into Saros as well. So very excited to have my whole butt kicked by whatever House Mark has decided is going to kick my butt now.
All right, for me, David brought this up. I'm basking in the glory that is my basketball team winning the NBA championship for the first time in 53 years. I'm sure the Boston Celtics fans are obviously happy for me, and they should be. I mean, look, I'm not going to lie to you. This has taken up a very large portion of my brain headspace for the past 2 months because I keep thinking to myself, this will never happen again. So they need to do it now. And they did. New York City is happier than it's ever been. There's never been a sports moment like this in my lifetime. And even I remember telling this to my wife, Sarah, like we were out in the streets with everybody after game five. And I said, it wasn't even like this after the Giants beat the undefeated Patriots. And she looked at me and says, yeah, because it was cold. And like, of course, we weren't like flooding the streets in February in New York.
Hasn't stopped us up here before.
Man, you guys love making it all about you. Anyway, the other thing I'm playing right now is I'm playing a game for review. It's under embargo, I guess, but like by the time this podcast comes out, the embargo will be up. It's a game called Abyssus, like Abyss with US at the end. It's a roguelike boomer shooter that is trying to present an aesthetic called brine punk, which is basically like underwater steampunk. It is pretty good. I'm enjoying my time with it so far. I haven't like completed a run yet, but it's, much like any other decent roguelike like Hades or anything else, like you complete runs and you get new items that make subsequent runs a lot easier. It's a lot of fun. It's definitely not perfect, but it's a really well thought out idea. Something I'm excited to play more of. So, all right. Thank you for all your time to the panelists. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Next episode, those of us participating in fantasy gaming for 2026 will provide a little update on how the year is going and, of course, have our first waiver wire draft. Should be a fun time, so be sure to stay tuned. Until then, happy gaming.
To learn more about today's episode and the writers featured, as well as to find other podcast episodes, video game reviews, op-eds, game diaries, retrospectives, thoughts about upcoming and new releases, fun lists, and much more, visit www.punishbacklog.com. The Punish Podcast is co-hosted by the three editors of the Punish Backlog, David Silbert, Sam Martinelli, and Amanda Tien. That's me. I make the visual graphics for our show, as well as edit the audio, and a big shout out to David, who handles distribution and back-end support. Our theme music is composed by Jason Hulse. Thanks for listening, and happy gaming!